Hey, what's going on, Bucks fans? We are back with a brand new episode of the Ike Bucks podcast. We've got a great show for you guys. My name is KJ Eichstead, and I'll be your host. I'm here today with Brian Weber. Brian, how's it going?
It's going great. Feeling good to talk Bucks. There's nothing better.
There is nothing better than talking some Bucks. So Brian's been studying the Bucks for over 20 years. He's got a lot of great stuff for you guys. If you haven't already, be sure to check us out on Twitter at @Ike_Bucks. You'll find plenty of Bucks and Giannis content, as well as the conversation surrounding it. So without further ado, let's get this thing rolling. And we had a little outline for you guys today for the show, but something happened that we're going to stray a bit off the outline in the beginning, and that is Rick Bucher, I believe it was First Things First, decided to make a blasphemous take about Giannis where we couldn't even let it go. Normally, we see blasphemous takes about Giannis every day, whether it's by big-name people with a lot of, you know, following, or just by uneducated fans who might not watch the Bucks enough. But this is one of those takes where, you know, normally we try not to get into the weeds too much, but we could not let this go. So let's play the take real quick.
An 8-point lead went down to a 2-point deficit. And then everyone wants to blame Giannis because it's easy. It's low-hanging fruit. Giannis is your team. Giannis didn't do anything. Giannis actually followed the game plan, and then conveniently, most people assume Giannis was the downfall when he wasn't.
Giannis got exposed. For those of us who have always said this is what Giannis has missing in his game, we had it confirmed. That's what I love about this All-Star game, is when you just put the stars out there, the best players versus the best players, and it comes down to the first one to 157, you find out real quick who the other players believe in and who can get it done in a one-on-one situation. That's why Giannis, that was the flaw in the team that Giannis picked. He didn't have any go-to guys on the floor. That's why they were going to Joel Embiid, simply because they were hoping that size advantage was going to get there. That's why I disagree with you on your solution on having Trae Young and Rudy Gobert out there. They were going at Kyle Lowry. Kyle Lowry ended up on Anthony Davis. They would have sliced and diced Trae Young. He might have created something for you at the other end, but Rudy Gobert wouldn't have been enough to protect him at the other end. It was an inherent flaw in the team that Giannis picked. But ultimately, when you want to go win a game and you think of the MVP, it's a guy in the playoffs, in the last 7-8 seconds, or the last minute, we need a bucket. Who are we going to go to? We're going to give it to our best player. Milwaukee Bucks cannot do that. And that's why people continue to look at who does he have around him. And I think that's an abdication of what the responsibility of the best player on the team is. You're the best player on that team, then when it comes to crunch time, you need to be the guy who's capable of going and getting it.
I don't think he got exposed. He couldn't shoot before.
All right, so just such a blasphemous take. We're not going to spend a whole lot of time on this, but Rick Bucher, you know, he's clearly going for clicks here. It's a common theme among journalists these days. He clearly, you know, I don't even know what to say to him besides turn on the tape, look at the stats, look at the record, look at the wins, look at the head-to-head wins, you know, look at his improvements this season versus last season. Look at his career. He has made big game-winning shots. You know, Rick Bucher, it just sounds like with a take like that, you watched about 5 seconds of Giannis in the last, you know, 5 years. So it's really unfortunate that you have to come at our superstar. And normally, you know, we wouldn't even acknowledge such a blasphemous take. But if someone's going to come at Giannis and try and attack him like that, then we can't let that slide. You know, we just called him out on Ike Bucks, and funny enough, he responded 3 minutes later, you know, kind of backpedaling a little bit. So it's just, I don't understand the logic behind hating Giannis on any level, whether that's you're hating on his game or hating on his personality. Like, both those things don't really compute, and it's just all in all just one of the most blasphemous takes of the year, and it could not go unchecked. So before we move on, Brian, do you have anything else to add?
I think any of the points that he almost brought up are inconclusive. They don't make sense. He was bringing up ISO basketball in terms of Joel Embiid going down to the post, taking fadeaways, Kyle Lowry taking ill-advised fadeaway shots off 1 foot. Kind of funny, Giannis was taking those 1 foot three-pointers in the pregame.
Yep.
But it's almost like Rick Bucher was, like you were saying, just looking for clickbait in this response, because I don't know if he's a Bulls fan, but it sounded like he was an upset Bulls fan since 96, because a lot of what he's saying wasn't making any sense out there, because Giannis Antetokounmpo wasn't the best defensive player on the floor that whole game. In the fourth quarter, he turned it off to a Defensive Player of the Year notch that I don't think anyone thought he had in him. Rudy Gobert wasn't in the same category. I mean, he did the LeBron James infamous Andre Iguodala block on LeBron James himself.
Yeah.
And I think 3 to 4 minutes prior, he blocked Anthony Davis and pinned him against the backboard as well. So Rick Bucher's take there just really didn't make sense in any regard.
Yeah, and just before we move on, it's important to note that Rick Bucher is judging Giannis based upon an all-star game. It doesn't make any sense, but that's what gets the clicks these days. It's just really unfortunate that members of the media continue in 2020 to doubt Giannis' ability to make these far-fetched statements that, honestly, I've lost all respect for Rick Bucher, but, you know, hey, Rick, I'll gladly come on your show. We'll gladly come on your show. We'll break it down. We'll show you exactly why you're wrong about Giannis. But, consider that, we'd love to hear your side of the story, and we'd love to just have an open conversation to, maybe allow you to further explain yourself, because right now the take isn't really making any sense. So just wanted to get that out of the way in the beginning. So let's move on. We're at the All-Star break. That's one of the reasons we decided to do an episode right now, because it's a very good point to stop and just take stock of where the team is. And we're going to get to that in a sec. But before we do that, let's just quick take a second and talk about this new All-Star game. What do you think?
Honestly, I think it was pretty phenomenal, to be honest with you. I mean, Chris Paul's suggestion of that fourth quarter playing up to 157 points, I believe it was, is just ingenious, because it's just really lighting a fire under all the NBA superstars. And you saw it come to life in that game. I mean, LeBron was playing with a chip on his shoulder. Kawhi Leonard was hitting threes. Giannis was a defensive mastermind. I mean, Kyle Lowry thought he was a god out in that floor. It just was really cool to see all the NBA players taking it seriously, which is something we haven't seen in our whole lifetime, to be honest with you. And it's just going to light a whole fire under all of the All-Star weekends going forward, not only just for the game, but for the celebrity game, the three-point contest, the dunk contest.
That's a great point.
It's just a really cool thing that has happened because of this.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest takeaway for me was that the players actually, cared out there. And we look at other sports, we look at the Pro Bowl, what an absolute joke it's become. And the NBA All-Star game was in danger of reaching that territory. But credit to everyone involved for this new format. It was definitely different. It was against the grain, but playing for the charities, that was awesome. The game was super entertaining, whether on in its entirety, like talking about the entire game, or just talking about the individual moments, like when Giannis played that insane defense on LeBron, blocked him, and just basically dove into the crowd, like showing his heart out there, showing how much he has the will to win. And that's such a great example for all the millions of people watching it, all the young kids, all the NBA players that, Giannis is not a player who cares about stats. It doesn't matter what the circumstances are. He cares about winning. And, in the fourth quarter, some people might say that that's a knock on him, but you won't say that he wasn't trying to win out there. He was doing everything he could to try and win. All-Star weekend, Chris Middleton, he didn't really have that great of a game, but once again, it's hard to judge players off an All-Star game. There's a lot of ISO ball out there. Skills competition didn't work out great. The dunk contest, Pat Connaughton probably should have received, more opportunities there. I think there's a lot of politicking. I think the judges really need to be revamped, because it's that where the All-Star game used to be broken, the dunk contest now appears to be broken. That used to be something growing up. You'd see Vince Carter. You'd see Aaron Gordon back in the day. Like, you'd see all these. It used to be a really special event, but now it's like this year, it seems like the credibility has gone completely away from it. Shout out to Pat Connaughton, Jumpman, 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 White Boys Can Jump. He He's jumping over Christian Yelich, an MVP.
Mm-hmm.
He's jumping over Giannis, an MVP. That's two MVPs, and he's smacking the ball off the backboard doing it. You know, he got zero credit for that. And these judges, I don't think they were really giving him a fair shot. What do you think about that?
I'm going to actually bounce off of your opinion and say the bias didn't just carry over for Pat Connaughton. I mean, look in the final round with Aaron Gordon. This isn't the first time he was snubbed, personally. I mean, he openly came out and said he's never going to compete in a dunk contest again, because I think we can all blatantly agree that he deserved to get that title. And no disrespect towards Derrick Jones Jr. of the Miami Heat. He had a great contest as well, and I think he could have gotten the trophy as well. But guess what? Aaron Gordon jumped over a 7'5" Taco Fall.
Pretty impressive.
The whole crowd's mouths were dropped. Fans were taking their takes on Twitter. They were disagreeing with it to the fullest, and it almost seems like the bias carried over not only on Pat Connaughton, but to Aaron Gordon as well, to a point that's even a little bit more severe in the terms of now one of the best dunkers in the NBA, if not the whole entire world, won't be competing in a dunk contest going forward, Shelly says.
Well, and it's really disappointing for me because I saw John Morant tweet out that he's not interested in competing in a dunk contest too, and it's easy to see why. He was a finalist this year as a rookie, you know, he was offered an open invitation to compete, and he was mulling it over, which showed he did have interest. But after this year, I think the results and the judging and the whole process of it really left a sour taste in his mouth, just like it did many of the fans. And I think it's something that Adam Silver and the NBA and anyone involved in All-Star Weekend need to really look at going forward to just put the best overall product out there. So that was nice to kind of touch on All-Star Weekend a little bit. Really surprised Dante wasn't in the Rising Stars game, but we don't need to get into that. Let's talk about the Bucks. So it's the All-Star break and the current landscape of the Bucks. Where do the Bucks stand at the break heading into the second half? Well, they have the best record. They're 46-8. That's 38 games over 500. They're, you know, it's an .852 win percentage. 25-3 at home, 21-5 away. It's absurd. 28-4 against the East. I believe that means they're 18-4 against the West. Best point differential in the NBA, plus 12.1. I think that might be on pace to do the highest ever. They won 8 out of their last 10 heading into the break. Giannis didn't really play because he just had baby Liam. But really, the Bucks are sitting pretty. They're first in the NBA in points. They're second in the NBA in field goal percentage at 48%. They're first in the NBA in rebounds by a wide margin. That's 52 a game. The next closest is the Nets. They're 48-something. They're seventh in the NBA in assists. They're second in the league in blocks. And this team, really, you know, you run the stats, and they're just looking really nice, not only on the eye test, but also when you look at the analytics. This team looks like they are poised to win the title. Last year we had a lot of these same indicators, such as point differential, but this entire team comes back a year older, wiser. We've got wins over some of these other contenders. The Bucks have wins over the Clippers, wins over the Lakers, wins over the Celtics, the Sixers, the Raptors. Giannis won MVP again. He's come back even better in every single category. So this is why, like, Rick Bucher, what in the world are you trying to say here? Increased efficiency and improved performance across the board from Chris Middleton. So this team really is just, they're rolling. The chemistry is off the charts. They're exciting to watch. They have multiple guys they can go to. If Giannis sits, they can still get wins. You know, this team looks deep. They look focused. And, you know, for the first half, Brian, did the Bucks exceed your expectations?
I would say they exceed the expectations and then some. I mean, they were undefeated against the Central Division up until the last game against the Pacers, which we were without Giannis Antetokounmpo for. So fill in the blank there. I mean, that loss is a loss, obviously, but not having your MVP makes a huge difference in that outcome.
Yeah.
I mean, we're on point. We're on pace for the best point differential in NBA history, which is crazy in itself in today's league, with shooting threes at a historic rate every year going forward. It's just increasing and increasing and increasing.
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, I don't even know if it's an argument that this is one of the best Bucks teams ever. I mean, go back to the days with Lew Alcindor and Oscar Robertson. this team's almost on pace to say, hey, wow, if they played in the game 5-on-5, 7-on-7, 8-on-8, I think this team could go toe-to-toe with them. And they put a ship, they put a ring on their fingers and brought home that championship. So, in my opinion, why is this Bucks team any different? I mean, we went through a playoff stretch last year where, of course, there was a lot of growing, a learning process. We had some great moments in some series, but against the Raptors, I think that was a really big learning point for Giannis Antetokounmpo, Chris Middleton, Eric Bledsoe, some of the integral pieces that have not won a playoff game, won multiple playoff games and that whole playoff series and that whole playoff triumph that I would say it was to make this team grow.
Yep.
Because you have to fall back first. I mean, look at Michael Jordan. His first two trips to the playoffs, he was out in the first round. And people weren't talking about, hey, like Rick Bucher, he can't get it done. He got exposed. Michael Jordan came back, and we all know the script that was written on that one.
Yeah.
I mean, this team has just learned a lot. You can see it. They'll be down 10, 15, 24 points against the Pacers without Giannis, and they cut it down to 4 points on the road.
Absurd.
With Victor Oladipo coming back, getting more minutes, he's getting more comfortable. Domantas Sabonis, where there's another player taking a massive step in his career trajectory. This Bucks team has a lot to be proud of so far, and I think there is a lot of potential for this team to fill the billing and bring home that ring for the first time in a long time for Bucks fans.
Well, it's even like what you're saying made me even think of LeBron. You know, he got dragged through the mud after that Dallas series where he left Cleveland, joined Miami, formed a super team with D-Wade, Chris Bosh, and those other guys, and lost to Dirk Nowitzki's Mavs. And man, like, you know, he was kind of getting the same treatment Giannis is getting now, lack of respect. Mm-hmm. He's not a closer, whatever you want to call it, but even worse. And look what he did the very next year. He took care of business. He took care of business the year after that. It didn't work out the last year of his tenure with the Heat, but then he went on to win a game or win a ship with the Cavs. You know, what you were kind of referring to was that learning experience in the Toronto series last year. I 100% agree. I think Bucks fans should you know, be comforted by that Giannis, the whole team, Coach Bud, the whole team really just learning from that series, and I don't think the same mistake is going to be made again.
And that's, like, something you can't gauge as well. Like, the learning experience a team goes through of falling all the way back to being on your butts. I mean, that's something you can't gauge. How is your team going to respond? I mean, I guarantee you there was Bucks fans going into this summer thinking that there was no way this team would be able to repeat it. And now they're exceeding expectations again. I mean, LeBron James is a perfect example as well, because I remember being a big fan myself of LeBron when he lost multiple series in the playoffs against the Celtics and losing that series to pretty much leave and go over to the Miami Heat. I mean, look, he won zero dark 30 that following season. Giannis kind of did the same thing this year with the Kobe's tragic news. He went zero dark 30 on Instagram. I mean, it's kind of like the stars are aligning for our MVP, our Milwaukee Bucks. It just seems like all the right things are coming together, and there's going to be a lot of hate always because the Bucks have not always been the prominent figure in the NBA.
Small market.
The small market effect, where all these larger markets like the Clippers, the Lakers, even the Miami Heat,
Boston,
these teams that have the money, they just think, oh, it's just a flash in the pan. It's just a flash in the pan. It's just a flash
Houston,
in the pan.
Houston, Dallas.
But that's just the fear.
Yeah.
That's just the fear that we have something established here.
I 100% agree. That's almost like the NBA's insecurity about the small market team being the hands-on favorites to win the title this year. And one thing you said actually is really worth you know, speaking a little bit more on is that after the tragic death of Kobe Bryant, rest in peace, and you know, everyone involved, Yana and all the families, rest in peace, but Giannis deleted his social media. Or, you know, he's got it back now, but he, you know, may have deactivated it, whatever you want to call it. And I think that that should be taken as Bucks fan by Bucks fans as an extremely positive indicator, because this superstar, this team, is focused. He is laser focused on fulfilling the challenge that Kobe Bryant proposed to him, and that's to win an NBA championship. And would you look at that? He's averaging 30.9 minutes a game, 30 points a game, 13.5 rebounds, 5.8 assists, and a 32.29 player efficiency rating, that's PER, which I believe is on pace to be the highest ever. Now, that might be, you know, I'd have to double check that, but it's just, once again, why would you ever talk down upon this man. Like, just the numbers don't support it. The eye test doesn't support it. And Giannis is on a mission that is enforced by the birth of Liam. You know, the desire to carry on his father's legacy, the desire to make Kobe Bryant proud, the desire to bring a championship to Milwaukee. And, you know, that's the only thing he's thinking about. He's not thinking about the Supermax, although he's going to sign it. He is thinking about bringing a championship to Milwaukee. So just to wrap up that segment, did the Bucks exceed my expectations for the first half? I have to say they did. I was a little worried that we might regress a bit because of these, you know, just how damn good we were last year. But, you know, I can't believe we even are even better despite the loss of Malcolm Brogdon. So yeah, Brian, do you want to add something real quick for everyone?
One last little cool take I have on it is, like, with all the hype you were saying of surrounding a team that was so successful the year prior, I mean, I can bring out a blatant example of a team that didn't live up to the hype the following season. I remember the Indiana Pacers with Paul George, Roy Hibbert, Lance Stephenson, George Hill, when they pushed LeBron James to 7 games. When Paul George hit that fadeaway three to send it to overtime, everyone was like, oh my goodness, the Pacers are going to be here for the next 4 to 5 years challenging LeBron for that title. The next year, it all went up in flames.
However, wasn't that when Paul George had that catastrophic knee injury?
It was. Yes, that's definitely part of the narrative.
They never recovered, though. They never recovered.
I mean, the franchise had to go into rebuild mode. Yep. Roy Hibbert's mentality kind of swindled away. And I remember it infamously when Lance Stephenson blew in the ear of LeBron James. Look at his career trajectory after that point. He was an all-star who I believe averaged around 16.7 boards, 6 assists. He was a steal and a block guy. He turned into a rotational player that's almost faded away in the NBA scene. It's kind of crazy to see how the hype and the expectations behind a pretty prestigious organization that's hosted the likeness of Reggie Miller's in the NBA world, just to kind of swindle away a little bit. I mean, Larry Bird, you could see it in his eyes. He was super upset after
he left the team. He left the team. I thought that they were poised for big things as well, but Paul George never really recovered from that injury. It took him a little while. He's obviously a damn good player now, but it didn't work out in Indiana. He kind of gave up and took the easy way out, but yeah, Paul George, you did kind of cop out and abandon your franchise, which we'll never support here in Milwaukee. You know, here loyalty means something, and Giannis has loyalty in his DNA. So just to wrap that up, man, it's incredible how the Bucks can even improve upon last season, but they have. So let's do a little segment that we've done in the past that's kind of fun, and that's good Bucks and bad Bucks. So this is basically where we talk about something good about the Bucks. There's a lot of it, but also let's talk about something that's not so good about the Bucks. So good Bucks, bad Bucks. Brian, you want to go first? Give me some good Bucks.
What I'm really liking about this squad is it seems like there's a lot of all-around contribution with every player in the squad. I mean, even though Brook Lopez isn't having the same season he was last year, I mean, his blocking efficiency and his blocks per game numbers this year are uncanny for even his career up to this point. So it's almost an amazing sight to see all of our players fitting into their roles so nicely alongside Giannis. I mean, look at Chris Middleton. Stepping up to the plate with that 5-year, $177 million deal, I believe.
He got dragged through the mud by Bucks fans last year. We saw plenty of hateful comments of Chris Middleton on Ike Bucks last year, and I think, you know, it's all good. Like, you know, Bucks fans, we welcome all of you, but yeah, Chris has really proven a lot of his haters wrong, and, you know, he's, like you said, taken an even leap forward despite being on that 5-year, $177 million deal.
Exactly. He might not speak much. He might not cause a flare in the media like a lot of the media people like, but he comes to the court, he plays lockdown defense, but then he comes back on the offensive end and he can put up 51 points, double-double without Giannis being on the floor. I think that almost silenced any critic that was out there, because if you can reach 50 points in a game, being double-teamed for the majority of, what, the 30 to 34 minutes he played that game, that just kind of proves the player that he's becoming. And the one thing I've always liked about Chris Middleton, regardless of this season, is that he just likes to step up to the plate in the big moments. I mean, he may not always hit the shot, but if you even watch some of the best superstars in NBA history, they can get trigger shy in big moments. But every time I've watched Chris Middleton play, when it comes to the last 30 seconds of the game, he always has that ball in his hand and he's ready to shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
And when it come playoff time, obviously we have Giannis Antetokounmpo, but if you have a second man option like Chris, who is just ready to pull the trigger, that's going to be able to keep defenses more honest. And that is key going forward for this team.
Yeah, it almost brings up the question, Bucks fans, you're going to have to let us know what you think. With the game on the line, would you rather have Giannis or Chris taking the final shot? I think it's pretty safe to say it's going to come down to those two guys. Like, you're not going to have Lopez doing it. You're not going to have Bledsoe doing it. Maybe dark horse would be George Hill. But I think it's, you know, very, very, very certain that if the game is on the line deep in the playoffs, we're going to either pass it to Giannis or Chris, both who are clutch, I would say. You know, both have hit game-winning shots. Like, Chris, I just think back to that Boston game a couple years ago in the playoffs where he just made that thing from way out, and he's made several game-winners in his career. We know Giannis had the one versus the Knicks. But what do you think? Who would you rather have take the last shot? That's a tough question.
It's honestly going to depend on defensive matchups and kind of how they come out of the timeout, how they want to guard. Mm-hmm. Giannis Antetokounmpo is going to be drawing a lot of double teams, but I think in some scenarios it might switch over to Chris as well. But your two highest paid players on your squad are always going to be the ones who need to take those big shots, and I think they're both ready. I think going through the negativities we did in the playoff scene last year, they both learned from it. They're both getting different defensive trajectories thrown at them this year in terms of the games being played. I mean, Chris Middleton's seen defense he's never seen before because he's becoming an established commodity. Last year was his first All-Star game, so people are like, okay, this kid can play basketball, or shall I say man, sorry. But
he's a father.
He's a father. He can ball. And it's just kind of showing that I think it can come down to either of them depending on the matchup. But at the end of the day, I'm going to want Giannis Antetokounmpo to take most of my clutch shots. But that can sway depending on teams.
Yeah, I mean, I'm honestly, like, I'd be confident with either one. Obviously, whoever would, if Chris takes a shot and misses it, you know, fans are going to be real upset that Giannis didn't get the shot. But almost, I feel like Giannis is going to get a lot of attention defensively. And also what worries me is that whether it's Chris or Giannis in the final play of the game, like, both of these guys being Milwaukee Bucks players are probably going to get hacked, and I don't think the refs are going to call it. So if Chris has the ball, I think he's for sure going to get hacked and not going to call it. If Giannis has the ball, he's MVP, so there's a chance they call it, although I think he gets a lot of unfair whistle treatment from the refs. We don't have to get into that, but
the rules change a little bit in the last 30 seconds of a basketball game. I think that's just the eye test. It's kind of an unwritten rule. I think basketball gets a little bit more old school in those last 30 seconds where they have a little more leeway in terms of contact and physicality, because then the real drama starts if they call a foul that's not a foul, and then all the media comes out and all the haters on Twitter and Instagram,
yeah.
And just everything can just come to head from that. So I think our team's ready for it this year, and I think Giannis and Chris experiencing what they did previously is going to help going forward for sure.
Okay, just for me, like, some good Bucks that I see is just the chemistry, the depth, and the focus. Like, this team is deep. We're going to trim the rotation a little bit as we get into the playoffs for sure. You know, the chemistry is unparalleled. Like, these guys, the way Giannis and Chris and Bledsoe are all going through learning how to be fathers together, like, you can't really say much more than that. The way these guys are supporting each other at All-Star Weekend, the way you have two sets of brothers on this team, like, Thanasis and Giannis and Lopez and the other, you know, Robin Ambrose.
It just doesn't happen.
It's just so great for chemistry. I think anyone who has a brother they get along with would really understand that, how big of a role chemistry plays in a game. You know, it's like that one phrase, what is it, like, the sum is, like, greater than the individual part.
Exactly.
The whole, some of the whole is greater than the individual parts or whatever. And that's exactly what the Bucks are, who have a pretty darn impressive set of individual parts. But, like, the chemistry just pushes this team even further. It pushes players to have confidence in one another. Everyone's cheering on the bench, you know. Everyone's into the game. It's not even going beyond that. The focus this year. I think last year everyone was kind of caught up in the Magic, which is completely understandable. Like, 60 wins for a Milwaukee Bucks team, no one had even,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's been forever since we've been that good. It's been forever since we won a playoff series. It was almost like a magical ride. It was like a dream. And we ended up waking up from the dream at the end of the, you know, Toronto series. But I think this year, this is real life. We've learned from that. And, you know, we have a focus that's laser focused on the NBA championship.
And the winning last year was almost unfathomable, like you were saying, for Bucks fans of me that have been cheering them on for 20 years. We've never seen that success.
Mm-hmm.
That's why when it came to such a stark ending as well, we were let down a little bit. But the greater horizon is this team is looking great and even better this year. And another thing I would like to say is chemistry can't be gauged either. Kind of like back on the experience part of losing and being able to get up when you're knocked down.
Yep.
You can't gauge chemistry of a team.
And not going to put that in the box score.
You can't. You can't just gauge that. And having two sets of brothers, you see everyone picking themselves up after a missed shot. The way this team comes together in terms of camaraderie is rare. And one of the most integral pieces of a championship team is having a brotherhood. Not just individual talents that want to play alongside each other. I mean, look at even Kobe and Shaq.
Mm-hmm.
They had a love-hate relationship, but they were truly brothers.
Yeah.
Even if you look at Shaquille O'Neal's reaction based on that tragic news, he was hit almost as hard as anybody.
I think we all were. You know, I think there's just, we are all just devastated by that news. But, you know, there's so much good Bucks to talk about. Let's keep it objective for a second. Let's flip the script. Let's talk about some bad Bucks. So what's one thing bad Bucks you notice that the Bucks are not great at or could be even better, could improve upon?
One downfall I would say this Bucks team is having in a few games this year would maybe be the inconsistent three-point shooting, and I think we can all see that. And that can lead to the lack of floor spacing, which can really hurt Giannis, because obviously he likes to thrive in the paint with driving to the basket. He does like his mid-ranges a little bit more than previously in his career, but I think the lack of three-pointers that'll drop through the net can be our downfall, because in all of our losses, it seems like the teams that have beaten us are shooting at a career high from the three-point range.
Mm-hmm.
And that's almost a testament to how good we are, that teams need to play at their absolute peak to compete slash beat us.
Absolutely.
But it also kind of brings to the head some of the issues the team has with the consistency at the three-point line.
A little bit of like an Achilles heel,
yes.
Whether it's offensive or defensive end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the Bucks' MO on defense, is we're going to guard the paint fiercely, you know, ferociously with their lives. Like, you will not get an easy bucket in the paint against the Milwaukee Bucks. But the flip side of that is we are not great at defending the three. And as we saw on Christmas Day, Philly, you know, they beat us pretty convincingly. Granted, it was only one game, but I think if there is something that we can nitpick about this Bucks team, it's a three-point defense. And for my bad Bucks, I'm going to talk about, you know, kind of piggybacking off a little bit. Like, Coach Bud, I think for me, I think he's a phenomenal coach. He's a coach of the year. Like, all the numbers support him. But I am a little concerned about maybe if something isn't working with the team, will he make the adjustments necessary? Because flat out in that Toronto series, he got outcoached. Nick Nurse outcoached him. Nick Nurse made the adjustments. Coach Bud didn't. And, you know, I think the whole team, when they lost two in a row, three in a row, they're like, hey, coach, what? Please help us. And he had no answers for him either. So that's one thing I'm going to especially keep an eye on, is when the going gets tough, is Coach Bud going to be stubborn and say, like, some of his comments last year were, I think if Giannis has to play more than 40 minutes, then we don't deserve to win. Like, that didn't really make any sense to me. It's like, yo, we're trying to get a championship here.
Playing basketball.
If you got to play 48 minutes, play 48 minutes. I don't think Giannis would disagree with that either. But when the going gets tough, I'm going to be hoping that he's willing to at least make an adjustment, whatever that may be.
This playoff run was definitely going to be a testament to that and his capabilities to making adjustments with the rotation. And kind of game-by-game altercations that are going to happen. I mean, injuries could happen. I mean, in the playoffs, defensive schematics completely change. Coaches bring out things that they haven't shown in the regular season, and that's going to kind of prove to Budenholzer's positivities or his negatives in
mm-hmm.
terms of being able to adapt to those situations. But another thing that it kind of comes to my head in terms of a negative for this team, which could...
Bad Bucks? Not bad a negative,
bucks,
but some bad Bucks.
Some
maybe.
Bad Bucks
yeah.
could be the 28th in the league in free throw percentage.
Yes.
But I think a lot of that could also be Giannis Antetokounmpo is at the free throw line probably double the amount as the next man up.
Mm-hmm.
And that can also play a big role in that, which can make the statistics a little deceiving, but
mm-hmm.
honest still, because we have some good free throw shooters on our team. No doubt about that. But when your MVP is always leading the team with free throw attempts per game, that's kind of going to skew the numbers in the bad Bucks side of things.
It's very important, you know, however we want to say it skews the numbers or not. Like, you know, in the playoffs, Giannis is going to be at the line.
Mm-hmm.
And please, please, please just make those free throws, Giannis. We love you, but please, please, please. make those throws.
Gotta cross your fingers, though.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the outlook for the second half. You know, we are going into the second half. The Bucks, you take a look at their schedule. They resume play.
Thursday.
It's Thursday, February 20th versus the Pistons. Should be an automatic dub. Saturday, we're going up against Philly at home. That'll be interesting. Then a quick game against the Wizards. And then we have the Raptors on the road, followed by Thunder, Hornets, and then a matchup against the Heat. Another matchup against Brogdon and the Pacers. And then it's the rematch against King James at LA. So quite a few tests, you know, and the second half of the season won't be a cakewalk. It won't be time to coast. Like, it will be time to maybe bring out some load management. But some things I'm looking at is I think it's time for the Bucks and Coach Bud to nail down their playoff rotation and kind of further integrate Marvin Williams. Definitely keep an eye on the load management. Make sure everyone's ready to go for the playoffs, just like Kawhi Leonard was last year. We want to lock up the best record overall, because if you look at the Bucks home record, we are 25-3, and the best away record in the NBA is actually the Lakers. But if we get that home, you know, home court victory, as good as a 23-5 away record that the Los Angeles Lakers possess is, the Bucks home record is actually higher in terms of overall winning percentage. So we'd measure the Bucks home record versus the Lakers away record. If the Bucks do lock up that number one home court advantage, number one seed throughout the playoffs. So that's a couple of things I'm going to be keeping my eye on. And I want to ask you the question, Brian. We're 46-8. Will the Bucks get 70 wins?
It's a good question, and I think there's a lot of factors that play into that being a 70-win team or not. But one thing I don't think we should be focusing all of our time on, or like all of our worries on, is if we do get 70 wins, because we do have the eighth hardest schedule in the league going forward for the second half of the season. We need to go 24-4 mm-hmm. to reach the 70 wins, obviously. But I think this team is definitely capable, but with Budenholzer trying to be really stingy in terms of having a team that has load management, I think it's possible, and I don't think it's our ultimate goal, but something's telling me that this team will get 70 wins, and I think it might be just 70 on the dot. I think we're going to get 70 wins.
Yeah, okay. See, I just ran the numbers, and like you said, 24-4 what is what the Bucks would need to do to get to that 70-win mark. Well, their current win percentage is 0.852, so 85.2%, and the winning percentage mark they'd need to achieve that 70 wins and 12 losses is slightly higher. It's like 85.27% or 80, you know, so it's less than one percentage point. But I, however, do not think they're going to get 70 wins. I think whether it's the load management, whether it's taking the final two games of the season off with the starters, something like that, you know, I'm blown away that we're going to beat last year's 60 win total. I think the 70 wins is kind of something cool to talk about, and if we do get it, I'll be ecstatic, just like every other Bucks fan out there. But I don't know. I would lean against it. If I was a betting man, I wouldn't bet on the Bucks to win 70 games.
It's a cool topic of discussion for sure, but like you said, it's not an end-all be-all.
It's absolutely useless, to be honest. Kind of like the Bucks' 100-point streak. So it's kind of interesting to bring that up real quick versus the Pacers, right? The other mm-hmm. night, a lot of Bucks fans are talking about the 100-point streak. Well, in reality, that's a really cool streak. It's a unique streak. It's really cool, but it
doesn't come around often.
It's useless. It doesn't mean anything. And take that as you will.
So, I mean, look at the Warriors when they reached 70 wins, how their script ended up getting written.
Is that the year when King
yep.
James?
That's when King James came back from 3-1, and the Warriors went home without the most prestigious and important trophy, and it had them saying, wow, maybe we put our marbles in the wrong barrel for a little bit.
You are right about that. So let's I want to ask you this. One thing that surprised you about the squad this year?
Well, I don't know if it would be as much of a surprise as just a beneficial factor towards the team, but George Hill, the experienced veteran, finding his form and his comfort here in Milwaukee has just been so revelational for this team. I mean, mm-hmm. shooting 51% from three, which...
Number one.
Makes you step back. It makes you step back in your chair and you go, wait, is he eligible for this?
Yeah.
Which is kind of insane to think about, because he's got to be at least, I think he's about 10, 12 years into his career, and he's having a career season right now. I mean, he's dealt with some injury issues recently, and he hasn't been in the rotation as much, but the fact that he's shooting 51% for this squad, that's leading the NBA in the best record, the best point differential. It's just when you have a veteran piece like that can hit down those crucial three-point shots, that's something that I believe will transcend to the playoffs, that can help this team take that next step.
George Hill is going to be critical. I think, you know, last year when we first traded for him, I remember running some numbers, and he took a little while to get going, but I think now, fast forward to when he's fully integrated in the squad, you know, had a full year with this team, Coach Bud knows what he's how to use him and everything. You know, we all see how much he's balling out there. So shout out Indiana George, shout out G Hill. Keep doing what you're doing. For me, it's how well the Bucks have responded to the loss of Malcolm Brogdon. I think anytime you lose a 50, 40, 90 player, regardless of how you feel about him, Bucks fans, anytime a squad will lose a 50, 40, 90 player, I think you would rather have a 50, 40, 90 player. Like, luckily we have Chris Middleton, but I think it would make anyone a little uneasy about just letting someone like that walk. I know during the time there was a little bit of frustration maybe with the ownership group not going into the luxury tax to keep Brogdon, but really it's ended up working out for the best. You know, Brogdon's found a good situation in Indiana. He's gotten his money so he can use that for his clean water initiatives. Just a tremendous guy. But the pieces that have really, credit to John Horst for putting this team together, the pieces that he's replaced Brogdon with, you look at guys like, you know, George Hill extended minutes, Dante DiVincenzo expanded role, Wesley Matthews bringing it on offense and defense, Kyle Korver, you know, it's, the team is better. The team is better, and how that is even possible is just so impressive, losing a 50, 40, 90 player, because Brogdon, look, we may be upset about him, maybe some of his comments, maybe something he said rubbed Bucks fans the wrong way, but he's a hell of a player. He's a hell of a leader. He elevates the play of his teammates, and I'm honestly surprised. That's one thing that definitely surprised me about this year's squad is that how we've actually gotten even better with the loss of Malcolm Brogdon.
It's crazy because that next man up mentality for this team is so ever real, because we have 8 guys playing 20 minutes per game. That's crazy to me, I think, and we only have 1 guy playing over 30 minutes per game. That means players are going to be more fresh. They're going to be more trustworthy of the rotation because there's a couple guys behind them that can come in and fill the void if they're having an off night, and that just has the trickle-down effect. The pressure is going to go off their shoulders a little bit knowing that someone can come in, fill their role. They can go on the bench for a second, get a swig of water or Gatorade, and come back out on the floor and just play loose. And mm-hmm. That is something you can't measure as well, and that's very important for this team.
I think it's really interesting how you brought up minutes per game. So Giannis, I ran some stats for Ike Bucks a couple weeks ago, and I believe Giannis is something like 50th or 60th in the NBA in total
minutes
played.
I think he's 71st now. I could be wrong, but I think he's 71st now in minutes per game.
And he's playing,
that's crazy,
just under 31 minutes a game. Well, in the playoffs, I want to personally see him playing 40 minutes a game. I don't want these games to be close. I don't care about resting Giannis in the playoffs. Like, we're here to win a championship, and if Bud needs to jack up his minutes 9 points, then, man, that 32.29 PER should result in some great benefits from doing that. So what's going a little deeper, what's one player that surprised you about Oh, I guess we kind of did just talk about George Hill, but
But I can go a little bit more into detail about it.
Well, is there you want to talk about maybe Dante or
Dante DiVincenzo's role for this team has been very, very substantial as well. I mean, like you were saying with Malcolm Brogdon being shipped out, that means that his minutes have had to go up, and having that injury-plagued first season, it was really hard for him to get his role going.
Yeah.
For him to put his foot in the door, feel like he can shake everyone's hands and feel like, hey, I'm meant to do this. Well, it's showing this year that he's meant to do this. He's an all-around contributor. He plays elite defense. I remember being at a Bucks game pretty recently, and I think it was the Clippers versus the Bucks, and I saw him get a rebound. He caught it. He did a behind the dribble move on Kawhi Leonard, the Claw.
Yeah.
And he dished out a great floor spacing pass about 10-15 feet up court to Giannis, and I was just like, that's really cool to see a guy who is honestly in like the second stretch of his rookie season, because he didn't get those minutes early on, playing so confidently in terms of team basketball. And his shot hasn't come around yet, obviously. But
He's all right. Yeah,
but I think
he could get even better.
Yeah, I don't even think he's really gotten close to his potential in terms of putting the ball in the basket.
Yeah, so Dante DiVincenzo, for those who are listening, he's shooting 45.6% from the floor and 34.4% from three, which is A-OK.
Which is pretty darn good.
We will take that. And like you said, I just want to offer a few words about Dante. I'm blown away at his, you know, leap this year. I mean, he's taken his PER to 14.79. I checked a couple days ago. It was over 15. But for those of you who don't know, player efficiency rating, the league average every year is 15. So for Dante to be kind of like Brian was just saying, almost like in his rookie season still, his first 82 games, to be almost a league average player, showcasing some of the best advanced defensive metrics in the NBA, flashing Connaughton-like athleticism, flashing the deep three, the dribbling moves, like, it's amazing that this young stud we have on our hands, and shout the horse for drafting him at 17th overall, he's a winner. He won a championship in college. He fits right in with the culture, and the Bucks have control over him for two more years after this season, plus the rights to match whatever contract. We might have a stud on our hands who could potentially be, you know, number three or number four option. Dante's got a lot of upside left.
Exactly. I mean, he's averaging 1.5 steals in a little bit over 22 minutes, which that's just crazy in itself. I mean, 1.5 steals is a great to have if you're averaging 32, 34 minutes per game.
Giannis is averaging 1.1.
So do your math there. That's pretty substantial to me. And like you said, I think there's a really big leap potentially for Dante DiVincenzo to come. Maybe not even next year, but in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Maybe with more playing time that he's getting in the second half of the season, which I think he will be getting, I think that's just going to be a lot more beneficial for this team, because his best game in his college career was a national championship game for Nova.
Great point.
I mean, that's not a flash in the pan type moment. When all the eyes are on you, you get the job done, he's hitting the big shots, he's shutting down their best offensive player, but then he was coming down, he was hitting 22-footers in people's faces to just seal the deal for Villanova.
Yeah.
You can't teach that.
Yeah, it's, one thing I'm going to be interested to see is, like, how much Coach Bud will play him in the playoffs. I hope it's a lot, but he is young, so we can't have defensive lapses, but he ranks as one of the best advanced metric defenders in the NBA, so just something to keep an eye on. We talked George Hill, we talked Dante DiVincenzo, but two players that have surprised me are, you know, Chris Middleton and Eric Bledsoe. Just both these guys, they were already great pieces to have surrounding Giannis, but, you know, they're both having great seasons, and when Giannis will sit, they've both shown that they can go off. They both play offense and defense, and, Giannis's two and his three are looking very, very strong. Now the rest of the NBA universe may like to mock the Bucks, saying that we don't have a second star, we don't have a second superstar. Well, really, kind of like Rick Bucher, you gotta watch the tape, you gotta turn on the film, you gotta look at the stats. And this team, I mean, Chris Middleton is earning it every dang day of the week. Eric Bledsoe, a fantastic third option, and just legions of depth behind these guys. So those are two players that kind of surprised me in a good way, you know, taking their games to a little higher level this year.
I mean, exactly. Players change, teams change, and obviously trends change. I mean, they're both low on the turnover side of things on that spectrum, with 2 turnovers per game, maybe 2.4 for Eric Bledsoe, but that's a number you're going to be happy with.
He's still got a good assist-to-turnover ratio. It's 2.2, so that's very, very good.
Besides Giannis Antetokounmpo, he's your primary ball handler. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he plays so aggressive on the offensive end when he's slashing to the basket like he does, 2.4 turnovers is a good number for Eric Bledsoe.
We can live with that.
Exactly.
You know, he's the point guard, like you say, he's a primary ball handler. So that pretty much wraps it up. Do you have anything more to add?
No, I'm just feeling really excited about this team for the second half of the season, and it was great getting to talk to all of you about the Milwaukee Bucks and the potential this team, I think, will be able to fulfill this year. Really have that feeling of championship. That's really the best word for it. This team just breathes championship to me. We got the experienced guys like Korver and George Hill. We have an MVP in Giannis, but we have those subsidiary guys in Brook Lopez, Chris Middleton, and Eric Bledsoe as well. Like, that is just very crucial for a team to be successful when it comes to the crunch time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's going to do it for this podcast. I just want to thank Brian for coming on. You did a great job, and it was great talking Bucks with you. You brought a lot of good insight, good analysis to the table. Bucks fans, we want to thank you guys for listening. Just, you know, hit us up on Twitter if you haven't already. Follow us, @Ike_Bucks. Plenty of great Bucks content on there. The conversation is always happening on there. If you want to talk Bucks, you're going to meet other great Bucks fans who you can talk with. So it's a lot of really cool stuff. We're going to try and do more podcasting going forward, so keep an eye out for that. And until next time, Bucks fans, we out.